Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 9.
And I said, so Larry, you go to the same place every week, connect with the same people. Your dog Rocky runs around. I said, can I join you in that? I'm going to bring my two little pugs, Vader and Ferdinand, and we'll just hang out at the dog park. And he's like, sure, let's do it. And so we start going there, get a small group of people. We say, hey, next week we're going to get together and have a little prayer. Anybody want to join us for that? And people are like, yeah, sure, we'll have a little prayer. And then suddenly, long story short, Larry becomes the pastor of Paws of Praise, which is church happened at a dog park. So at 80 years old, Larry planted his first church, and it actually grew to about 36 people regularly. And Larry takes out his Bible, share a little Jesus story. He would ask people what they thought about it. The dogs would run around and play. They would pray together, and they're having church right there in the dog park. And we have congregations that are filled with Larrys that if they just thought about what they already do every day, every week, with the people they do it with, that an opportunity to share Jesus in those relationships, that little bit of a shift can really unleash the people of God in new ways.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast, ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches. Now, here are two guys who have been encouraging thousands of pastors all around the world, good friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. My name is Jeff Cady. I am here in the opulent and luxurious 200 Churches Podcast Sound Studio by myself today. If you hang around to the end of this episode, Johnny is going to talk to you about what is on his mind and what he's thinking about actually this last week of April 2021. I don't know about you, but the weather is starting to get better. People are starting to come out of the woodwork. They want to be together. More folks have shown up at church. They've been vaccinated, and they are out and about. And you can just see the end of this whole virus era coming to an end, at least in terms of people getting out and about and being around each other and stepping into whatever the future holds for us. I don't know, but speaking of the future, our guest today, Dr. Michael Adam Beck. Leonard Sweet calls him his number one protege. Now, if you don't know who Leonard Sweet is, you'll just have to look him up. It's spelled just the way it sounds, Leonard Sweet. He has been an innovative, outside-the-box, totally revolutionary ministry thinker for quite a while, a prolific author and lecturer and teacher, just a great gift to the church. Leonard Sweet calls Michael his number one protege. And he says that he has relational skills that Leonard can only dream about. In fact, he thought so highly of Michael Beck that he wrote this book with him called Contextual Intelligence. And I have that book right here. Let me put on my glasses so that I can see it. The byline is Unlocking the Ancient Secret to Mission on the Front Lines. Contextual Intelligence, a Fresh Expressions book. Says we live in a changed moment. We live in a charged moment. There's no more business as usual in any arena or activity. How do we navigate and negotiate this new world where God seems to be saying, behold, I do a new thing. Do you not perceive it? So Michael Beck and Leonard Sweet write that book together. I'm so thrilled to have it. It's a hardcover. I love hardcover books. And Leonard's going to be on with us next week. So this is kind of a part one to this Fresh Expressions, Contextual Intelligence. We're all trying to figure out this new world we live in. And it's not even just COVID, right? It's not even just the virus. This has been happening for a while. Things have been changing. And the church, the expression of the church needs to change. And if you go back to episode 340, which would essentially be season one, we didn't know it at the time, but there were a lot of episodes in season one. But episode 340, Chris Morton joined us, and the title of that episode is Ideas for Fresh Expressions of Your Church. And if you went to 200churches.com and actually went to that, just search for episode 340, 200 Churches, you can pull it right up. Chris Morton gives some, I think there's a free ebook there, and a few links to a few things that would be helpful. That was kind of the first exposure that we had at 200 Churches to this idea of Fresh Expressions. Fresh Expressions is a movement now that's gone kind of around the world, a few different continents. And Leonard is involved in that. Leonard Sweet. Michael Beck is as well. And Leonard says about Michael again, he says, Michael's widely used in my tribe by bishops and conference executives. He has helped other denominations and ecclesial networks catch a vision for what he calls a blended ecology, in which inherited and cutting-edge forms of church can live in a symbiotic and synergistic relationship. And Leonard goes on to write, this requires enough adaptive change to engage the new missional frontier, but without leaving the traditional church behind. So again, Leonard Sweet's going to join us next week, but today is my conversation with Michael Adam Beck. You can find him at michaeladambeck.com. He's got a ton of good resources there and exciting. I say young because he's a fair bit younger than me. An exciting young man. You will enjoy this and wait until the end because Johnny's going to share with you what he's been thinking about this last week of April 2021. Here's my conversation with Michael Adam Beck. Michael Beck, welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. Hey, we're going to talk today about small church ministry, and I think some of what you're going to have to say is going to encourage pastors of small churches. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, Jeff, first, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be on with you today. And my name is Michael Adam Beck. I'm a ordained elder in the United Methodist Church in the Florida Conference. My wife and I serve two small revitalization congregations, one in Wildwood, one in Ocala. They're about 30 minutes apart. And we've been at Wildwood for the past 10 years, and just over the summer during the pandemic, we picked up St. Mark's United Methodist Church in addition to the Wildwood congregation to try to see if the Holy Spirit could bring some revitalization there. And then I'm kind of very much part of the gig economy, so I have 5 full-time jobs for part-time pay.
Okay.
Would you like me to share all of that? Or
so remind us again, what state did we start in?
Okay, we're in Florida.
Okay, Florida. We started in Florida. Okay, go on.
Yeah, so I work for an organization called Fresh Expressions US. I'm the national director of remissioning there. For my conference, I also work for my denomination. I'm the cultivator of Fresh Expressions. And in Florida, we have 625 congregations and about 300 Fresh Expressions of church.
And you kind of oversee all of that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And then I'm a professor at United Theological Seminary, which is in Dayton, Ohio. And there I'm the director of the Fresh Expressions House of Studies. So we offer a doctoral focus, Master Divinity track, and some non-degree certificate certifications and programs as well, all under the House of Studies.
So now I'm interested, where did you get your education?
So I got my Master Divinity from Asbury Theological Seminary, and then I studied with Dr. Leonard Sweet at Portland Seminary for my doctorate. Yeah, my dissertation with him on contextual intelligence, we published as a book together.
We'll have to get together and talk about that sometime, won't we?
Yeah, I would love to do that. Get Lynn on here with us.
Okay, so United Theological Seminary, and it seems like you had a couple more things.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I get confused daily, too. So just the other thing that our two traditional congregations, we also have a network of about 15 Fresh Expressions. Those are forms of church for people that don't go to church is the simple definition, but those meet in analog spaces like tattoo parlors and dog parks and Tex-Mex restaurants, and also digital spaces like Facebook groups and Zoom rooms and several digital churches we have as well.
Michael, we had an episode 340 of the 200 Churches podcast. We had Chris Morton, who talked to us about Fresh Expressions. Just specify, what's Chris's role within Fresh Expressions compared to yours?
Yeah, so Chris is the director of strategic initiatives, and he does amazing things with our digital promotional and organizing all of our different trainings and creative things that we're doing.
Fresh Expressions, you're talking about Facebook and digital and Zoom rooms and things like that. You started all this long before the COVID pandemic came into the U.S., didn't you?
Correct. Yes, sir.
And did you see anything dovetailing there? I mean, did you see how maybe you were ready for some things or even accelerated some of your initiatives when COVID hit?
Yeah, absolutely. My approach, so I've served a series of revitalization congregations. So like my first church had 12 people in worship My second church had like 20 something. And then 9 years ago, nine and almost 10 years ago, Wildwood, we had about 30 people in worship. What I believe the Holy Spirit has done in those congregations is we try to encourage a priesthood of all believers, being strategically team-based, and we try to care for the inherited congregation as much as possible and meet those kind of traditional expectations, but also knowing that no amount of that is going to bring those congregations back to a place of missional vitality. And so alongside, we've kind of cultivated these new little forms of church in the community and what we call third places, or just kind of neutral spaces out in the, you know, community where people hang out and do life. The thing that I didn't really know about Fresh Expressions when we started doing this over a decade ago, it was just, we were just doing it kind of instinctually. We planted a church in a Diane's Diner barbecue restaurant. We planted a recovery church alongside the existing church. Both of those became larger than the traditional church itself pretty quickly. And then we just had to find ways to kind of connect those organisms or communities together, if you will. When the pandemic struck, we were kind of ready for a new way of thinking of being church and releasing everybody and their giftings to be a part of it. Yeah.
And your work on contextual intelligence, does it overlap with what you just talked about?
Yes, sir. One of the things that we kind of propose in the book is that churches can really be a bastion of IQ. A lot of our clergy have, you know, master's level degrees and a lot of training. And even really high EQ, which is, you know, the ability to lead a group of people and to be an emotionally and be sensitive to the emotions of the people and your own emotions. But what's often missing in churches is contextual intelligence. And that's the ability to read the signs of the times and to know what to do and to be able to apply our knowledge, our DNA, in a sense, in a contextually appropriate way in communities. And a lot of times what we do as pastors, and I know I've been guilty of this my whole ministry, is we try to take a strategy that's been developed in some other context and we apply it to our context. And then we wonder why that doesn't work, rather than starting with prayerful listening in the spirit and inhabiting our community in a prayerful way and kind of finding out what God's up to in the community already and then joining in with him.
You said applying our DNA to our context. Is that how you put it?
Yeah, or how those things can synergize in the context, sure.
This is exactly what we've had to be doing, right? In the last 8 months, whether we've been doing them, I say 8 months, it's been longer than 8 months.
Yeah.
It's been like 10, 11 months now. But whether we've been doing that well or not is, I suppose, another story. But that's what the context of our times is calling us to do, is to see how we fit when you strip away all of our usual forms, i.e. the public worship service and visits and small groups and all of the in-person stuff. When you strip that away, then how does our church family, our DNA, get applied to our context? So what are you learning? What have you learned in those areas in this past? Now it's almost a year, but any two or three things that just kind of rise to the surface that have really become clear to you because of COVID?
Absolutely. I think the whole Fresh Expressions movement to me is a kind of a move back to the primitive church that we see, like in the book of Acts and the early church pre-Constantine. And so I think what's been really helpful is in a post-Christendom situation where the church is not at the center of U.S. American life and culture anymore, we've had to kind of go back to the caves a little bit and subversively scratch fish on the wall and meet wherever we can, get away from the professional clergy kind of model and really release the whole people. And so I think if I had to pick a couple key things during the pandemic that I've learned, I think it's a cul-de-sac for church leaders to not embrace digital reality. There's a sociologist called Manuel Castells, and he talks about real virtuality. So for emerging generations, digital natives who are born with a screen in their hand and a game console in their bedroom, right? Their experience of digital life is real. It's not this separation between virtual and real. It's real virtuality. And so we need to take on a posture of incarnation in that. And that's not necessarily like streaming the stuff that we used to do before, but now into a digital space, but actually exploring the digital space as its own kind of mission field and asking, how do we listen in this context? How do we form disciples in this context? The key learning that comes off of that is we have to change the way we communicate the gospel, not the gospel itself, but rather than the monologue and the 20 minute, you know, 3 points in a prayer thing, we have to actually learn to facilitate conversations with spiritually curious people. And we can't assume any theological knowledge or base and really work in an inquiry based way and ask questions and share Jesus stories and get people to think about those Jesus stories and kind of explore them for themselves and emerge as deal with questions as they emerge. And I don't think that this is my third. I know this is such a long answer. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Go ahead.
The third one is that's not saying now we need to abandon analog church and there's no place for the physical molecule swapping. You know, I think in John's second letter, maybe the 12th verse, I think it's just one chapter, I think. But he says, you know, I'm writing this technology. I'm using this. I'm writing you this letter. I have so much more I want to say, and I can't wait to see you face to face so my joy can be complete. And I think in quarantine, we're all experiencing that. Like, we want to get back. In my state, Florida, we're having the worst kind of spike than ever in the whole year of the virus. And we long for that. But at the same time, we know there's times where we have to use the available technologies, exactly what John and Paul did, to sustain relationship, to communicate, to build, Christ-centered communities in every way that we can. But it will be a blended ecology. We will never go back to just analog physical only. It will always, I think, at least in my lifetime, be a mixture and a blend of analog and digital, like a hybrid kind of thing.
Could you say that some of us could look at that and say, okay, we'll take blend, but could we also think of it as augmentation of digital to real life and to physical presence? Instead of taking the physical presence, dividing in half, making some of it digital and some of it physical, can we say that we'll still attract people physically, but now we're augmenting that with a digital, with a real virtuality that is not going to go away? Is that fair?
Absolutely. And that is such a key point. And it's one of the failures that we had leading up to COVID, when our fresh expressions, you know, the augmented, you know, with technology component you just talked about, we just didn't do that well. We thought we were being kind of, you know, innovative and having church and tattoo parlors and dog parks and all that. But we found that those groups of people, they were very much just like our traditional folks who lost the sanctuary, lost the ability to go in there. They were very connected to their place too, just like somebody would be connected to their pew or their, you know, hymnal setup or whatever. So when we go back to when we can have these smaller in-person face-to-face gatherings, we're going to have augmented hybrid versions of that, where we're using digital all along and planting some churches with a digital first kind of way. But even our in-person stuff, it has to be, I think what you said there was great, this augmented, a hybrid way.
And what I was going to ask you earlier, you talked about real virtuality. Just unpack that a little bit, because I've read on some of this where those of us, so I'm in my 50s, those of us in our 50s, we really don't understand what that looks like to a 20-something, where digital and in-person, they're both real. Just unpack that a little bit.
Sure. So, there's a lot out there about the difference between a digital native and a digital immigrant and the experience of technology. So, you know, Marshall McLuhan wrote about the medium is the message, and the technologies that we use, they're not neutral, right? They reshape us. They shape the way we think and behave and fall in love and all of that. And so it even changes the patterns of our brain. So like in the Gutenberg galaxy, it was, you know, lines of text from top to bottom, left to right kind of thing. And churches are set up in that way. And It's just deeply that technology's form society around the written word, right? But in a digital technology, in the digital age, it's now a iconographic way that we think. So we think in icons and symbols and rich kind of metaphorical, image-rich kind of things. And so this, even the way that emerging generations think and use technology, experience technology, there's a difference of that. So like for me, I go to therapy online. Some of my closest friends, my covenant group, we sustain our connection through technology. I just wrote a book with a guy that we spend a lot of time together. We've never read in person, Rosario Bucardo. And so I just think it's easier for us to immerse and live in and be an incarnational presence within the techno sphere itself, if you will. So a lot of our folks that we're reaching in these digital fresh expressions, they live in other states. So they join into the membership of our church as a network partner. So we know that they're never going to walk into our physical space, but they tithe, they participate daily with whatever we got going on. They pray, they are part of the Bible studies and the worship. So their whole discipleship pathway is in that digital, all these digital forums that we're trying to create where people can have conversations and where the Holy Spirit can work in that. That's what I'm trying to say is with real virtuality, you know, I serve a traditional congregation of people and they think a lot of the things that we're doing have no bearing to the traditional church. And they think we should be spending our time doing something else. So they're not seeing a lot of benefit in a lot of the digital things that we're doing. So there's a disconnect there.
Oh, good. So you're experiencing that disconnect too, because 200 Churches is all about encouraging small church pastors. And I was going to work my way to this small church perspective, because I know we've got pastors. I deal with it, and I'm in a kind of a smaller, medium-sized church. We think that, okay, this whole pandemic situation has proven to us that digital doesn't work. People are Zoom-roomed out. They have, you know, Zoom fatigue. You hear all this stuff. Kids aren't really learning. It's a total bust. Therefore, digital is not the way to go, and it was a big mistake. And as soon as we can all get back together, we're just going to ditch it. But that's not really true, is it?
No. And I think it's biblical that to have a blended ecology of church where we're never going to not need, you know, analog, in-person worship. But no, I don't think that's the experience of most of the people in our digital fresh expressions. They feel quite fulfilled and are having meaningful relationships and really enjoy all the online offerings that we have.
Now, the people that are outside of your area, they're in your network, digital network, but they're outside of your area. I mean, you do think about, right, how to get them connected in their context, in their locale, to real other believers that they can have fellowship with, right?
Absolutely. So like in our network partner vows, one of the things we say, you have a commitment to stir up holy mischief in the city or place where you are, so that we're providing support for your spiritual growth, and we're, you know, trying to be a community where you can find healing and grow as a disciple of Christ. But then you have to share that and find creative ways to share that in the context where you are, the physical place where you are, right? The focus of that equipping is for people to be in ministry together in the space. So yeah, absolutely, that aspect is there.
Okay, let me stretch our thinking just a little bit here. Not yours, maybe it's already stretched, but I'm thinking about a small church pastor who, a lot of churches, you know, they'll start small groups. And you might have a church, let's say you've got a church of 25 people, and you think, okay, so let's see, I can get maybe three small groups of 8 people out of this if, you know, you got 25 adults. But Fresh Expressions is all about fresh expressions of the church. And as you said earlier, you know, you've got some smaller congregations. Could a small church pastor work with his 25 adults to maybe come up with some fresh expressions of how to celebrate God, share God, serve others within the community, where they could take, they could have 25 in a physical space, but then they might make two or three other physical spaces that wouldn't look like traditional worship, and maybe one or two digital spaces that would be fresh expressions of the church. Talk about how you've seen that happen, how that's happening within your movement right now.
Jeff, not only do I feel like that can happen, I feel like it's essential if the church is going to become vital, missionally vital in the U.S. American context. I think it's a biblical, very deeply biblical concept that we have a stationary God and a mobile God. So God in Zion, his holy hill, he draws all people to himself, physical, in a space where we worship God. And he's a tabernacle God. He's out on the move with his people, you know, leading them in the wilderness kind of thing. And in the New Testament, we see, you know, Antioch in Jerusalem, this weird fresh expression kind of thing happening in Antioch, the Jerusalem thing happening. Hmm. I know that early in my ministry, I was trying to do all the things I was trained to do, making house calls, hanging paper, my mentors called it, you know, winning the LOLs, the little old ladies, the matriarchs, trying to preach well, trying to really spend a lot of time developing sermons, all those things. And the churches were still just failing and dying because no amount of that is going to reach people that don't go to church, right? What I think we've been able to do is to take those that have the shining eyes, those that are really passionate about wanting to share their faith, wanting to see their church thrive in new ways. We get those little group. The whole congregation doesn't have to be on board with it. Not everybody has to sign up and say, oh, I'm going to be part of this. It's just a small little group. We find a person of peace in the community. That's Luke 10. Jesus says he sends the disciples out in teams, two by two, find the person of peace. That person of peace opens the door to that community, that network, that tattoo parlor, that yoga practice, whatever that is. And then we just start to form community with them where they are. The thing that we didn't anticipate, because the goal of these fresh expressions of church is not to fill up the Sunday service, right? It's not to like funnel people back to the traditional church. It's to form church with people where they are. But one of the really cool things is when people grow and mature in their faith in those groups, they say, oh, you know, so Christians aren't these terrible, you know, whatever kind of stereotypes they have. They're actually good, loving, decent people. So I think I will go check out the Sunday morning or the Wednesday night, you know, worship experience or whatever. So there is growth that happens in the inherited congregation through releasing the people to be in mission to the community and then people coming back into the traditional church. So I think really, I believe any church can do this. Not only is it that any church can do it, but that we're actually called to do it.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, you mentioned the Gutenberg Times, and you said that this print from left to right and in, you know, columns and rows, and you said that it shaped how we did church. Mm-hmm. Make that connection for me. How did it shape, how did the printed page shape how we express ourselves in the church?
I mean, if you think about Martin Luther, the Reformation, and how we all kind of inherited that, and how the Gutenberg printing press was the technology that fueled that, right? Because now we all have a Bible in a language that we can read it. And then if you look at the structure of a sanctuary, it very much looks like the page of the written word, lines of pews leading up to a sanctuary. And there's architecture around all of that that's beyond that, of course. But what do? We sit in a pew. We listen to someone, usually a written manuscript that they're reading to the folks. We process in through our intellect this, you know, forceful, rhetorical, line-by-line kind of arguments, biblical expositions, whatever you want to call it. We sing out of a hymnal that's line by line, and we have an organ with organ music going line by line, note by note. These technologies like, you know, the written word and the Gutenberg press, we don't actually usually understand how deeply we've been shaped and formed, and even the way we think is shaped and formed by those things. And so what I think's happened now that we've moved away from the Gutenberg into the information age and into a network society, that a lot of people just aren't resonating with that, sitting in the pew, hearing the 3 points in a prayer. It's kind of foreign to their normal way that they process information and think and engage other people.
It'd be like, you know, everybody else has got a cell phone, and then there's still that one or two people with a handheld wired landline at home.
Right.
And they just continue to use that, and they can't access any of the features like texting or FaceTime or any of the features of a modern smartphone, which, of course, that term is so dated, smartphone, right?
Right.
We didn't realize those things because we're the fish that don't even know we're in the water, right? As part of our culture.
Right.
And so what you're emphasizing here is that culture is changing and the water is changing. You're talking about digital natives versus digital immigrants. For some small church pastors out there who are just trying to get by week to week, just unpack the difference there for just a second again between digital native, digital immigrant.
Digital natives usually begin Gen Xers on the younger side, about probably the 1980 mark, where you move into like millennials and then Gen Zs. And millennials were born with computers and digital technologies. And then, to use your phrase there, the smartphone revolution, which put a supercomputer in the pocket of every person. And so kids that grew up with that, like my grandkids, they have little screen devices that they're probably more proficient in than I am, and they're toddlers. From their earliest age, they are oriented toward the screen and iconic thinking. And so that's for them to jump into a Zoom room and have real and authentic conversations with the others, or digital representations of others, if you will. That's not hard for them. Like it would be, you know, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm between a Gen Xer and a millennial. So I didn't grow up with a smartphone in my hand, but I had access to technologies and things that were just starting to emerge. Beepers were kind of the thing when I was a kid. So, but I can kind of live in both those worlds. I'm fine having good digitally enabled relationships and community. So a digital immigrant would be somebody that would be born before that whole era where the, you know, supercomputer became kind of readily available. And it's more difficult to even access the features of those technologies, much less be comfortable doing discipleship and worship and those kind of things in that space.
So that's such a great distinction because, you know, I'm 57. I've always loved technology. I've always dreamed about technology beyond whatever I had at the time. But I'm still a digital immigrant. And it's not my native tongue, or I need an adapter to go between me and that. And right. Yet my grandkids, the oldest of which is 4. Yeah. I mean, they pick up the iPhone and the pad, they call it the pad.
Right.
They pick these things up and they don't even think about it. So you're saying for them, that's reality. Unlike with me, it's this virtual, it's disconnected from me. I can access it, but it's not real to me. And yet you're saying to younger people, that's reality.
Right. Most of their social relationships and networks and how they communicate is all connected to those devices. So, yeah. And I think I would be remiss not to warn of the dangers of that. And I know we've all seen the dangers of digital technology and how that can have a very addictive and destructive set up the same pathways in the brain for addiction as the very similar to drug addiction and people, you know, social media addiction, likes, loves, and all that stuff. So just like with any mission field, there are dangers to navigate. And in the digital frontier, we have to understand that these technologies, there's this kind of third party that's there to monetize our attention. You know, it's been called the attention economy. We are the data that's being mined, just like oil was the oil of the industrial age, data in the information age. And we are the product that's being the data is being mined from. So I think followers of Jesus, we have to be critical of technology. We have to be able to examine it and see the good and the bad of it, and be able to help our people understand that. And we have to be able to reverse the algorithms, you know, just like Christians have always done, the same algorithms that wire people for consumerism and narcissism. We Christians have to find ways to reverse those, you know, create communities of love and shalom in that world.
Michael, let me just for the last part of our conversation here, let me port over to Fresh Expressions in a Digital Age, this book that you wrote with Rosario Picardo, how the church can prepare for a post-pandemic world. Now, this is a quick write, I would think, because we just figured out about the pandemic recently, and I'm always amazed at how people can turn these books around so quickly. But you and Rosario, tell me just a little bit about you guys and how you work together, and tell me what's the big idea? What's the thrust of this book that we could really learn more about if we purchased it and read it?
Yeah, so Rosario is one of my co-professors at the seminary, and we wrote the book in 2 months. And Abingdon Press put a pretty speedy release because they felt like we were trying to speak into something that's timely. The idea of the book is really that a lot of what I've been talking with you about, the blended ecology of church, how do we sustain our traditional congregations and use technology in creative ways to do like care for our existing members. And we have a whole chapter on going old school in a new school world, how in this digital space, it's so important. You know, care packages, handwritten letters, phone trees, connecting youth and our chronologically mature members together in reverse mentorships where they're, the older folks are passing down their wisdom to our youngest in our churches, and our youngest in our churches are teaching our older folks how to use Facebook or hit a YouTube link, and how to kind of live into the middle of all that. So a lot of it comes out of our own experiments and failures and learnings over the past year, and just trying to forecast a little bit what we should probably stop doing and what we need to begin doing, and how to rethink how we preach and form discipleship groups and all that good stuff.
So there's all these things to think about. What do you think are the most important things that a small church pastor, especially like a bivocational pastor, where time is really critical to them, you know, they just don't have a lot of it, and yet they know that they need to grow in an area, or they need to extend their church expression into the community, maybe in a different way. You know, where do they start? What would be like the first thing they should just start thinking about, knowing that all this stuff takes time, and you know, anything worth doing is worth taking your time and doing it well. Just kind of give them a starting point, or at least a starting thought.
Yeah, I think it's going to sound overly simple, but just getting a small group of people with bright eyes who are passionate about sharing the gospel, getting them together, kind of people mapping your community prayerfully, looking over your community. Where are the places where people are already hanging out? You know, is it the soccer field or the park or the coffee shop or wherever that is? And then asking the Lord, do we have a person of peace in that space? Do we know somebody who owns that community center, or somebody who takes their dog regularly to the dog park, whatever that is? And then just kind of starting to do experiments that don't cost the church anything, but just getting out in that space, using technologies. If you're not comfortable planning a church in a digital space, that's fine, but we can still use the digital technologies that people, you know, use and live in every day to connect people in a physical space and smaller groups in the community. And I think that the key thing that we as clergy, and I'm a bivocational myself here, so is that the idea of the professional minister who's going to do all the ministry, and then there's, you know, the people, our congregants, who receive that cannot continue and this actually work. It has to be strategically team-based. It has to be a return to the priesthood of all believers. It has to be a shift in producing the religious goods and services and kind of being a chaplain to being a missional equipper of people and helping them understand that they're ordained in the waters of their baptism to be followers of Jesus, who share their faith and who grow in their faith with everybody that they encounter. So we really do have a missionary force sitting on our pews, and sometimes it's just a little bit of shift. Let me share one story and I'll shut up. I know I'm going too long.
No, you're not. This is good. This was really good what you just said, by the way, and I'm going to follow up a little bit with it because it is a mindset shift that we already know. We've talked about probably some of us for decades, but it's really becoming crucial. Okay, what's your story?
Okay, come back to that because what you just said is so good. I had a parent pioneer, Larry. Unfortunately, he just recently passed away from cancer. So Larry was 80 years old, and he's gone to church his whole life. Good, upstanding Methodist. And we started talking about all this Fresh Expressions business, you know, 9 years ago, and being in church with people that don't go to church. And all these little experiments started coming up, you know. And Larry's like, "Well, I'm, you know, not going to go to a tattoo parlor, and I'm not going to, you know, go worship Jesus in the Tex-Mex restaurant, but I go to the dog park. I go to the dog park every Saturday. I have a community of people. I take my dog Rocky, my Labradoodle, to the dog park, and I have a bunch of friends there. We just sit around, talk about, you know, college football, whatever." And I said, "So Larry, you go to the same place every week, connect with the same people. Your dog Rocky runs around." I said, "Can I join you in that? I'm gonna bring my two little pugs, Vader and Ferdinand, and we'll just hang out at the dog park." And he's like, "Sure, let's do it." And so we start going there, get a small group of people. We say, "Hey, next week we're gonna get together and have a little prayer. Anybody want to join us for that?" And people are like, "Yeah, sure, we'll have a little prayer." And then suddenly, long story short, because Larry becomes the pastor of Paws of Praise, which is church happening at a dog park. So at 80 years old, Larry planted his first church, and it actually grew to about 34, 36 people regularly. And Larry takes out his Bible. He would share a little Jesus story. He would ask people what they thought about it. The dog would run around and play. They would pray together, and they're having church right there in the dog park. And we have congregations that are filled with Larrys and people that if they just thought about what they already do every day, every week with the people they do it with, that an opportunity to share Jesus in those relationships, that little bit of a shift can really unleash the people of God in new ways.
Paws of Praise.
Paws of Praise, as in P-A-W-S, yeah.
Yes, yes. I love it. That's awesome.
That was Larry's idea too.
That is awesome. So you brought us back. You brought us back to this idea that ministry isn't just for the professionals, but this priesthood of all believers. Of course, I thought immediately of Ephesians 4:12, and I think that's a verse that a lot of us pastors like to beat ourselves over the head with, because we know how true it is, and yet for some of us, and I don't know if I'm one or not. I'll just be honest. I haven't really thought about it, but for some of us, we want to serve our people. We want to be the ones teaching them the Bible. We want to formulate the worship experience. You know, we want to train the greeters and the guest services people. We want to do all these things, and we're controllers. And especially pastors of small churches, you know, it kind of puts you into that spot because there's not a lot of people. And after a while, you just kind of accept the fact that, yeah, you do this and this and this and this. And what you're saying is that Fresh Expressions cannot grow out of a church, and a church literally can't multiply unless pastors are willing to let go and give the ministry away and teach their people that they are ministers of this fresh new gospel.
Amen. And that's not about like, so we just say, "Oh, that's a great idea. You go do it." It's walking beside people. It's being their, you know, their Barnabas. It's not just not having responsibility or accountability. It's literally just the shift of, helping them see themselves as the ministers and the missionaries, and our role more is growing fruit on their trees and not necessarily. And all those things you just said, Jeff, like, you don't have to stop doing those. It's, you know, organizing the worship and usher teams and all that. That's what I love about Fresh Expression. It's not an abandonment of the inherited church, which I was shaped and formed by the inherited church. So I love the inherited church. But it's doing that and this other thing on the side, and then kind of grafting those together.
Well, and it's taking that, instead of doing, it's equipping.
Yes.
So it's taking that word right from Ephesians 4:12. It's not just the saints doing the work of the ministry, but that we are the equippers, and that's where you said we walk alongside of them.
Amen.
Yeah, that's great. So, Michael, tell us where you are online. Tell us where we're likely to bump into you.
The easiest place is just to go to michaeladambeck.com, and I have, you know, a blog and a website there, and all my books are kind of listed there. But I'm also, you know, at Fresh Expressions US and at United Theological Seminary as well. And we do,
okay,
just one little plug for the seminary. We are trying to think about inherited smaller church pastors who maybe are thinking about, okay, I get it, I got to do something different. I have to be educated to do that, because I don't know about you, but my seminary didn't really prepare me for the world that exists now.
That's the Unseminary podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What you never learned in seminary. Yeah. Unseminary podcast. We'll plug them for free.
There you go.
Okay. So you've got the United Theological Seminary.
Right.
And you offer what kind of training for the Fresh Expressions track?
Yeah. So we're trying to get these young leaders that are coming through for the MDivs. You know, we give them a track in Fresh Expressions, so they would pick up some of these skills and some of this missional ecclesiology that you and I have been sharing about. But then there's the D-Men program, which is a practitioner-oriented doctorate for people that are already in local churches. And I have 4 or 5 of my students in my current cohort right now. They're all small church pastors that are trying to figure out, you know, how to respond to this new scenario. And then the non-degree programs are certifications where it's, you know, CEUs and continuing education, but teaching anybody who would want to come, lay or clergy, the skills that they need for the current missional frontier.
And what's the URL for the seminary?
Oh, unitedtheologicalseminary.edu. It's in Dayton, Ohio. Let me make sure that I have that right. And obviously we're, you know, on Facebook and all of those good things.
How often are you in Dayton, or aren't you ever?
Here comes the being in a digital network society. Most of what I do actually is completely online. It's unitedseminary.edu.
Okay.
But most of my classes are taught. We have immersion experiences, and we have, you know, weekly intensive. So you come to the school for 5 days, you do all your in-class kind of requirements, and I'm there for those.
Okay. And so you do those how many times, how many weeks in a year would you go?
4 a year with the different programs we have going on.
And is that 4 different visits?
Oh, no. Now, if you're a student, you just have to do one of those a year. But depending on if it's the MDiv students or the DMin students or the certifications.
I did a hybrid approach for my master's 10 years ago, and I'm doing a hybrid approach for a DMin right now. And I tell you, hybrid, man, it's so good because you get connected to the people, you don't leave your real world, and then the digital doesn't seem so digital when you know the person on the other end.
Right.
So I just want to encourage people, hey, if you want to look into unitedseminary.edu, it's really doable. It really is, especially if you're within driving distance of the school. You go and you hang out with people for a week, and then you connect with them online after that. And it's really effective. It really is. It's not like the old mail order degrees that, you know, they used to have back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Right.
This is a digital monster. So that's cool. Hey, any parting shot for small church pastors, just to give them some encouragement that can counteract what you said about we're going to be in a never-ending pandemic?
Well, not a never-ending one, but it's definitely going to have implications, I think, for the rest of our lives. And, you know, I'm just trying to be real with the fact that there's not a lot of people aren't going to come back to our churches. And so we have to be prepared for that, and we'll be able to connect with new people and all of that. So don't let me be a hope stealer, but I would just say pick up the Fresh Expression of the Digital Age, getting ready to be a post-pandemic church, because we do have some pretty practical things in there that any local church could kind of experiment with in a contextually faithful way.
Well, hey, Michael, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it, and I hope that we can track on into the future together.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
I totally enjoyed that conversation with Michael. If you want more from him, again, just go to michaeladambeck.com. If you want to hear more about Fresh Expressions in the church, go to episode 340 of the 200 Churches podcast, where we talk to Chris Morton. And be back next week, because we're going to talk to Leonard Sweet, and he's going to really dig deep into this whole idea of contextual intelligence in the context of the church impacting the world. But now I ask Johnny, would you share what's on your mind? What's going on? We want to stay connected. Johnny has reached out to several guests that we're going to have on the podcast here in the very near future. I'm looking forward, now that things are changing a little bit, even in our lives, Johnny and mine, our lives are settling down a little bit, you could say, in some areas. They're probably ramping up in other areas, but I look forward to being able to be in person or even on Zoom with Johnny more, and that we can be contributing both together on the podcast. Season 2, Episode 8 was a blast just last week. We had a lot of fun. So, Johnny, share with us what you're thinking.
So, Jeff gives me this prompt. Johnny, talk about what's on your mind. What's been on your mind? He says, go for 5 minutes or 20 minutes. I'm going to try to go closer to five because I respect your time too much. I'm so grateful to Jeff for getting out these episodes and doing these great interviews. Next week, you know, we've got Leonard Sweet on, which is incredible. And it's just a testament to how much Jeff cares about you, the small church pastors out there. And not that I don't, but where was I on this episode? You know what I'm saying? And there's Jeff. So we know that Jeff loves you so much and is out hustling for you, even as he has so much craziness in his own life going on, with his son getting married and kids moving around and grandkids and the whole nine yards. So here is what is on my mind, okay? This week, maybe it was last week, it was Barna came out or Gallup came out. One of the pollsters came out, and they had this data that for the first time, I guess, ever, less than half of Americans reported going to a house of worship on a regular basis. Less than half of Americans self-identified as church, or I think they even included mosque or synagogue going people on a regular basis. And as you look at generations, you see that it just drops for every single generation. So if the boomers are, you know, likely to go, millennials are less likely to go than that, and then the Gen Xers are less likely to go than that. And when information like this comes out, there's always this sense of, what are we going to do? The sky is falling, Chicken Little type stuff. But I wonder a little bit if these numbers are just telling us what has always been true. So maybe people went to church, but it obviously was not something that ever really sank down into their souls. And Jeff and I talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and this has just been burning on my mind so much, is, does the way we do church actually lead people into discipleship? Or does it just pay our bills? Does it just keep the elders and the deacons happy? Does it just look good on paper or help us sleep better at night or whatever it is? And I just wonder if less than 50% of Americans report going to church regularly, what does that say about what we've been doing and what this thing that we call church is heading toward? Because I think we also have to realize that what we call church, the Sunday morning, go to the church, sing some songs, listen to a sermon, hear an announcement package, like the best, slickest, not even best, let's not even say that word, but the slickest churches out there. Elevation, right? I don't know. What are the slick churches? I don't even know anymore. I was going to say Saddleback, but that's not a slick church anymore. But, you know, North Point, whatever. These big churches that have million-dollar budgets for video production and blah, 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 blah. You go, and you know what you experience? You experience 3 to 5 songs, an announcement package, and an interesting sermon. Everybody's doing the same thing, and it doesn't actually make disciples. Am I allowed to say this as a pastor, that this thing that we do doesn't actually result in the life change, deep Jesus-centric discipleship that we long to see people finding their way into? That's hard, man. Because we love church. We love the rhythm. For you listening and you're in a liturgical tradition, that liturgy speaks to you, man. Like, that's a thin place in your heart where you're meeting God in a real way. And I'm not detracting from that. I love the Sunday morning church experience. I can appreciate the little country church with the dusty hymnals, and I can appreciate the church with the mega million-dollar worship and light and sound budget a year. Because I was raised in this. It means something to me. But if I look at it with just clear-eyed realism, I have to admit that it is not doing what we really want to see done. So, I don't have a prescription, but maybe the prescription is just, it's time to break out a little bit. It's time to try some stuff, man. And I'm not talking about rearranging the worship order, okay? I'm talking about, like, doing something different than you've done before outside of the walls of your church. I'm not saying don't have church. I'm not saying don't have Sunday morning. I'm not even saying don't invite people to church. But the realization that I'm having is that, you know, the sexy new church in town, can I say that? The sexy new church in town, they're not actually getting, like, new people. They're just cannibalizing people from the less sexy churches, right? This is the it church of the moment. What are we doing to actually demonstrate the love of Jesus and invite others into the love of Jesus, realizing that the love of Jesus transcends a Sunday morning service? And if it doesn't transcend a Sunday morning service, then the love of Jesus must not be as good as we tell people it is, because they've stopped coming to Sunday morning services. But I don't believe that. I don't believe that the love of God is the problem. I believe that thinking we can just do the same thing over and over and over again and it'll go back to the good old days, that's the problem. Let's try some new stuff, man. That's what's on my mind. That's what's on my mind. There's great podcasts about this. Actually, if I could recommend one, it's the 538 Politics Podcast. And you're thinking to yourself, the 538 Politics Podcast is going to talk about this issue? And the answer is yes. It absolutely does talk about this issue. The 538 Politics Podcast, you would be doing yourself a gigantic favor if you went and looked it up, and they had an episode last week called Americans Are Losing Their Religion, and that's changing politics. So check it out, listen to it. It's good stuff. This is the moment. We got an opportunity to do some stuff. We're going to fail. We're going to do a bad job. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. We're going to learn new things through doing things badly, and that's never fun. But if we don't do it, I mean, if we don't do it, we have to do it. So that's what's on my mind. Thank you very much, Jeff, for tossing it to me. Next week, Jeff is going to be back with Leonard Sweet. It's going to be an amazing conversation. You're not going to want to miss out. And it's all going to happen right here next week on the 200 Churches Podcast.